We have Commissioner Wood, Commissioner Field, and myself. If we could all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Richard, could you lead us?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic, one nation, God.
We are Zooming, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Hello, everyone online. I'm going to turn this meeting over to Brian, our town administrator.
All right, so I guess I'll sit here while I'm speaking. You have a mic, at least for me. I know I speak really soft, so I'm going to try to use the mic. Hopefully everybody on Zoom can hear us okay. Should be able to see us up here at the table. There are three separate town codes, I'll say, that are on the agenda for review tonight. The commissioners have had the information, I think, for a little while. I think the main purpose of the public hearing is just to get feedback from you all in attendance, whether you're in person or in Zoom. We'll be sure for those on Zoom that we take our time and give everybody an opportunity to speak on the three separate codes. There's an agenda that we have up on our website that I think for tonight, as we go through it, it probably makes sense for us to go kind of in reverse order. There are five different charter amendments proposed, as well as one ordinance related to pets, which was passed by the town commissioners back in 2009. And then the third code is just chapter 175, which is our overall zoning ordinance. I think we would do well to save the best for last. The zoning ordinance is the biggest chapter. It's 75 pages. It has a lot of information about how the town would like to see development and land use happen in the future. I'll tell you, from my perspective, as one of my jobs as town administrator is to help enforce the laws that we have, and zoning includes some of them. I know in working with the Planning Commission, we do have two Planning Commission members here tonight, Chairman Ken Confalone and member Ursula Budart. I guess, Ursula, maybe you came on a little bit later, but the changes have, Ken, I think it's probably been 2.5 years, the planning process, you know, with the Planning Commission reviewing in detail every section of Chapter 175, as well as recently the pet ordinance related to the chicken amendment. I'll tell you the main reason for the revisions is really just to try to make it clearer, not just for town commissioners, but town staff and our residents and our businesses to understand the laws that we have. And, you know, they were not perfect when they were created. I think originally, I think it was in the 60s, Ken, am I right?
Yeah,
the first. Okay. Yeah, the latest version of Chapter 175 was last amended in 2011, but certainly planning laws in this country and in this town have been around since, I'd say, the 1950s and 1960s. And I think just as over time, as the town grows and development happens, there calls for changes and updates. So I guess that's why we're here this evening. The first item in the packet, the first group of codes, I guess, is related to charter amendments. I'll go hop onto the computer here and make sure if there's any comments from the public in Zoom. I'll certainly we'll ask folks here in the room. The first charter amendment, there's actually two sections of the charter proposed for updating this evening. The first section is related to powers and duties of the president. And the section basically reads, I'll read the section in its entirety, and then I'm going to read the section that's proposed for deletion, and then the section that's proposed for addition. So the president shall assure that personnel actions are carried out in accord with town policy as contained in its personnel manual. The president is ultimately responsible for all hiring and firing actions, which are done with the consensus of the commissioners. Done with the consensus of the commissioners is what's being proposed for deletion. And then the last sentence is, with respect to town employees working under the operational control of the town administrator, personnel actions will include recommendations from the administrator. So the section that's being proposed for deletion is done with the consensus of the commissioners. The section that's being proposed for addition is all hiring and firing actions, which are approved by the president, in addition to a majority vote of the remaining commissioners. So I just think the idea there was to make it a little bit clearer how hiring and firing actions would proceed. So I don't know if we want to start with folks in the audience. Is there any comment on that proposal?
If you're reading from available.
What I can do, no, I just have copies for us here up front printed out, but I can put it on the screen.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yep. Give me a second. Any other comments, I guess?
I think you're going to have to see it.
Okay.
Before they can make the comment. Because it's kind of hard to remember everything.
Yeah.
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 The
President Faulkner is here. He is on Zoom. Is that what you just said?
No.
Yeah.
I got to get the resolution right here. There we go. So hopefully, on Zoom there, as well as out here.
It was a better size before.
Yeah, that's okay.
We're old, can't see. Right.
Speak for yourself.
That is that section.
Yeah, great.
You just have to stay there and move it down.
That's the section that's involved right there. A is the what part that's being proposed to change right there.
So that's coming out?
No, the bold is being added to.
Okay.
The part that's before that in the brackets is what's being deleted.
Okay.
For the five commissioners.
Yes.
Now this pertains to paid personnel.
Yes.
Yes.
It was cumbersome before. But the consensus, like four out of five to do routine personnel action. I mean, I understand we have a weak mayor form of government here, but my God. Yeah, this is just throwing sand into gears.
I will say, for the most part, this way it has been done. It's just being written that way.
I guess if there's no other comments from folks here in attendance, is there anybody on Zoom who'd like to unmute themselves or raise a hand to give us some comment on this proposed charter amendment?
The thing that's missing for me is having worked in business for big corporations, is there's no reference in here of talking to an attorney, making sure that everything's legal. And that's always the case. Anytime you lay anyone off or you fire someone, you go through a legal process in advance of that to protect against liability.
Yeah, well, these people are not paid, they're voted in. And
but we have a town attorney.
Yeah, I know that.
And in the first sentence, I think it says in accord with town policy.
Right.
Now, you're referring to employees, that they could also fire employees with the account. Is that correct? Okay.
I guess for the commissioners to consider this particular amendment, is there any additional discussion, or does the board want to take any action? Anybody want to make a motion?
Well, I don't know we were voting on it today. I thought we were just going
to. We're not voting.
We're not voting on it.
Today is just a public hearing. We do not. This will be at the next meeting. Today is just listening.
I'm going to ask a question, and maybe stepping back territory. I'm not sure. But if there's a problem with one of the commissioners, do they also have the ability to ask them to resign?
That's in the charter.
Okay. Is it in there? It says that.
That was brought in, I want to say, like 8-9 years ago.
I think there's a section of the charter that talks about that. Say, like absenteeism, you know, if you don't show up to meetings. I think there's also an ethics ordinance where some of that's contained. I'll tell you, these proposed amendments are just some of the work that needs to be done in the charter. So there probably are other places and things to look at. All right, Commissioner, should I move on to the next?
Yes.
Well, all right, so the next charter amendment. This is for to clarify voters. And I'll read the section. Again, I guess you guys can see what's being proposed for deletion in double brackets and what's being proposed for addition in the bold capitalized letters. So every person, again, this pertains to voters. Every person who is a citizen of the United States is at least 18 years of age and has resided within the town for at least 3 months immediately preceding any town election and is registered in accordance with the provisions of this charter shall be a registered voter of the town. Every registered voter of the town shall be entitled to vote at any or all town elections. So what's being proposed for deletion is just the fact that you need to reside within the town at least 3 months before the election. What's being proposed for addition is you need to reside within the town for at least 30 days immediately preceding any town election. And that's basically just getting our charter in line with state election laws, is my understanding.
So the state election law is 30 days and not 3 months?
Correct.
Okay.
Actually, the state law is you can register the day of, but after talking to our election board, because we don't have the computer system, they have to do it 30 days prior so that we have all the paperwork. We do not have the ability, like the county does, to verify people are voters on the day
but
of.
The county does. Right. And all they have to do is call the county. It's a very simple process.
There was a law.
We don't have the computer doesn't make that right, we right. don't have the ability to access the computer in Elkin. That's not exclusionary because you can vote on the day of an election if you register on the election in this state. That's fine. Now I know that Diane Letts says that would be a provisional vote, but let's say you have a town commissioner election and you have a tie in some, you know, because you've got multiple candidates, you have a tie. If you had a provisional vote on that day, that could resolve the election. So it seems inefficient and going counter to the way the state votes in a small town. When in fact you could access the voting rolls in Elkton, a simple phone call. When I registered to vote, it was a very easy process, and I went to Elkton and did it. And the ladies there were absolutely great and very efficient, and told me everything that I needed to know about how to vote. So our electoral board could do the same thing.
Ken.
There's only a slight problem. You don't register in the county to vote, then you register in the town. You won't have a record with the county. And it's not necessary for you to be a county voter in Charlestown, no paper.
I did ask that question to Diane, and she said, I think there's one person that is just town. Everybody else is on the regular one. But I do hear what you're saying. Is there anybody?
I didn't come here for this. I came for this, but I'll if I may be a devil's advocate, unless the rules of the state stipulate that you must allow people to vote if it's in any way possible to validate that they are capable or that they are allowed to vote, being more restrictive is not necessarily a bad thing. I don't subscribe to the notion that everybody should always get to vote on anything regardless. For a local election, it seems like a stricter requirement is actually more beneficial than for a broader election, when you might be much more likely to be familiar with all of the things going on and all of the major issues. Whereas local elections are very closely tied to community values and things that you're not going to know. I mean, you don't know anything. If I just moved here last week, I will absolutely know zero about anybody that's up for any local election or any local performances or anything else. I won't have had an opportunity to learn anything about how the community operates or what the norms are even in my community, if I haven't had any time to live there and learn any of those things. I've lived here for several years, and I've just started to learn some of the things surrounding the community. I don't have a problem with being more restrictive, unless obviously there's a legal ramification to that. But if there isn't one saying, hey, if you're going to vote in this local election, it's about local issues, it's about local policies. If you're not local yet, you moved here yesterday, you're really not local. You're from somewhere else, you will become local. Give it some time.
It's got to be pretty set across
the board. This specifically talks about voting in town elections. This doesn't say that if I moved to this town from another Maryland city today and there was a Maryland-based election tomorrow, no question, I should be voting in it. But if there's a town election tomorrow, I would think I would need, in fact, I, as a policy, if I don't know anything about an election, I won't put in a vote, right? I will skip If it's about...
That's your choice.
I understand, but I don't have a problem with restricting choice for somebody else either, because I think there's a good reason.
But I think if you put too many parameters on different deals, whether you're talking about the small town or you're talking about, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, or talking about the state, it has to be one basic rule that applies all the way across the board. It just makes it a lot easier all the way around.
So,
I choose not to change my address on my license, and I have all of my mail go to my business address. I can't vote in the town election, even though I live here, all because I don't want to change my license. That's done simply because I don't want the NBA to send something here, send something there. I need everything to go to one spot. But I live here, and I can't participate.
And Trey, just to your point, I mean, that is one amendment that's going to come up. It's about the driver's license.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
But Suzanne, did you have something?
Mm-hmm. I think if the resident here in Charlestown, whether it's been for 5 days or 15 years, they deserve, who's to say, mm-hmm. what they can offer our town. And I agree, which is wonderful. But, you know, I respect your input.
It's Phillips.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but I just think that is, we're boxing people in, and it's a point for the town.
And people's concerns are the same. If they move from wherever they are to wherever they're going to be, their concerns and their beliefs are going to be the same. So what they want in their old town, they're going to most likely bring it here that they want to vote on. It's their right to vote.
And I am hearing what everybody's saying, and something that I can do, I have off on Monday, so I can contact the election board to see how it would be easier for us. Because when we were going over this, that was something I said we should be with Maryland law or Maryland regulations. And I said, it says that they can register the day of. So, and it was brought up about that. So I can reach out to the election board to see if it would be easier for them, how easy it would be for them to call up there, and if somebody's there, or how it works.
Maybe we knew that we had limitations to do that we could even say, you know, if we were to do it by 2 o'clock day of, you know, give wiggle room, but give opportunity. I think that's a fair.
I can discuss that with them to see what it is. Because like I said, when we talked about this at the town meeting, I did look up the Maryland rules and regulations, and it does state that you can register the day of to vote. So there is limitations. It is valid points, and I understand what everyone is saying. Is there any comments online?
Anybody on Zoom wish to unmute themselves or raise their hand? Let us know if you have any comment on this particular charter amendment.
And I will also figure out about what you're saying. I don't know how to answer that one. So I'll figure out what the election board will say about that.
I know when I...
And it might be that you have to register...
That's
so you have to change your driver's license. No, because you don't have to have a driver's license to vote anywhere in the state of Maryland.
What right? I'm saying is, if you can prove that you live, I need to figure out if you're saying that you live here and you can prove that you live here, you might be able to register for just the town. You can.
So I know one thing that you can do is prove you get mail.
Yeah. Utility bill.
I don't get mail, but utility bill does have the address on it,
sure.
Even though it's mailed somewhere else.
Yes.
So that's one way I could do it.
You have the deed to your house. You have the deed to your house. You have your taxes to your house.
Yeah.
You can use your tax. You can.
I'm going to talk to the election board to find clarity on that. I'm not sure that how that will work, because most of the time it is off the where you register to vote and all that. So I need to figure that out. And yes, I know you don't have to share a driver's license, but you still have to
You have to have an ID, have a passport, or
passport,
you
know, is good.
Yeah, it's a legal, it's a legal document.
Yeah,
for identity, doesn't say where you live, but
The background on this was that the person could vote two different localities.
Correct.
Okay, and so the problem came up the last time this came up in the charter had to do with if you had a driver's license in one municipality, but therefore free to vote in it. Okay, because you had a driver's, you could have an ID there. You could also vote in another municipality, and there was not, at least at that time, 8-9 years ago, any way to check that person wasn't capable of voting in both, whether or not they chose to. Right. They would have the capability.
And it doesn't clarify that on the website. I do know that, but I will get some guidance on that. Is there anybody else that would like to make a public comment?
I don't see anybody on Zoom. Next.
I'm keeping notes, I'm sorry.
All right, so this amendment's for the purpose to allow one alternate position be appointed to the Board of Elections and Supervisors. And this is, there was nothing to be deleted in this section. It was just, I'll just read some of it, not belabor the meeting. There shall be a Board of Supervisors of Elections consisting of 3 members and 1 alternate who shall be appointed by the president with the approval of the town commissioners. That's essentially the change, is basically to have an alternate position. We have other boards that are appointed by the town commissioners that from time to time, especially, I know one in particular, the Board of Appeals, which is a small board, there's only 3 people on that board. It became necessary, I think, in operation of town duties to just have an alternate position in case one of those 3 couldn't make it to the meeting. So this is just formalizing that in charter, the fact that an alternate position could be appointed. Case that position was needed.
And background story, wasn't it like 5-6? It was when you and I were on the board, wasn't it? That the appeals board couldn't happen because all 3 could not be available at the same time. So this is being consistent across the board. Is there any comment from anybody about adding an alternate?
It's a good idea.
Anybody online?
Yeah, how about anybody on Zoom? Any comment on that first amendment? Next.
Where are we at?
All right, so should be 04. Resolution 04. This pertains to registration.
We just did that one.
This is another. Actually, there's 2 changes here. Mm-hmm. It is similar to the previous one, not 03, but 02, where it talks about, well, I'll go through and read it, but the difference is the fact that it brings up that you can register in section 606A. You can register in the town as well as a county office on a town or a county business day, at least 30 days prior to any given election. That's essentially the change. It's making it 30 days instead of 90 days, which is what it was previous, and then making it allowing citizens to register in both with either a town or a county office.
Why are we talking about county offices? This is a town. This is town business, not county business. Why would that be included?
That was added, I think it was at the suggestion of the election board. I
don't agree with the election board, so I think that's it's unnecessary because Why would the town be restrictive of anyone running for county office? The town has no business.
No. It's just that a resident, a town resident, could register to vote.
Not to run for office.
Oh, not to run.
To a town office or a county office to register.
Okay. Okay.
It's saying you don't have to register at the town office.
Right.
To register at the county.
It's not running. It's
just voting.
I also have one other issue. Is I have a big issue with the 30 day.
And I'm that's part of what I'm gonna clarify.
It's in this one too, so
yeah.
It needs to be addressed and omitted.
I'm making notes.
The amendment is that it's saying you can register at town or at the county.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where previously it was town only.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And basically it's the same thing. Renee's already going to look into that. So
part of this was at one time you could register only to vote for the town elections because people didn't want to register for the county because they didn't want to do jury duty. That has changed because it's based on your driver's license now, or your ID. So, it's just adding the fact that you can go to either place.
Yeah. Sorry, I just want to make sure our audio is working.
So the last, if there's no comment on Zoom, this amendment will go on the last charter amendment. This is where it talks specifically about commissioner candidates. That any person desiring to become a candidate for commissioner under the charter shall at least 30 calendar days before said election file with the town of Maryland a driver's license and a statement of such candidacy in substantially the following form. And then it lists the form.
I thought we were going to add state ID because some people do not drive. And I know it was... We talked about that. Your state ID has.
I thought we were going to leave it, but we could add that.
Again, however, you don't have to have a driver's license.
To run?
No. Why would you? Yes, my grandfather lived in a small town, and he chose not to drive a car, and he didn't have a driver's license. He
still has
because
an ID.
He walked everywhere he went.
He still has to have an ID.
Yes, an ID, but that doesn't have to be a driver's license.
That's what I just
said.
That's
what she just said.
Okay.
I just said that.
Yeah, but it's this just keeps driver's license keeps popping up. And
I said it should also include state ID to prove that you
No driver's license, a proper form of ID should be the wording as opposed to leaving driver's license in. Driver's license should be omitted because it's not necessary.
Now,
you don't have to have a driver's license.
It can stay there and then
or
state ID.
Or state ID.
Suzanne?
Just to say, I agree. I think the driver's license is necessary.
Yeah.
Yes.
And unnecessary. And I don't know any other jurisdiction that requires
right.
a driver.
Anyone else?
Is there anybody on Zoom who has comment on this last charter amendment?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
And again, I'm just going to state what I stated before that.
Wait a minute.
You got to listen really close.
Can you hear me? Okay. So again, I don't think that the provisions of the requirements of a driver's license or a Maryland driver's license or Maryland ID should be required. You won't find it in any other provisions of, you know, any other registration charters of any other town in the county, to my understanding. I mean, what's required is that the person be a resident of the town, not that they have a Maryland driver's license or not that they have a Maryland ID, but that they be a resident. And there are many ways in which you can provide proof of residency. I just think, you know, the town setting is being a little over the top on that. I know it's nice and easy to, if they do have a Maryland driver's license or ID, but it's certainly not a requirement. And I don't think it should be in there. So that's all I have to say on that. So, okay.
Saying yeah. No other jurisdictions require even a state ID, it's just proof of residency. Right. And that's as it should. I'm also going to talk to the election board on that because I'm talking to the IRO.
I use my passport when I register to vote in Maryland.
This isn't just registering, this is to show that you are a resident. And in the charter, it says you have to be a resident for a year.
Right. But if you were a resident, wouldn't the town have water bills that for the year?
Not necessarily. If you rent and it goes to your landlord, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. I don't hear any other comments on Zoom. I guess we can go next to... How about the pet ordinance amendment?
The pet ordinance? Is this okay?
The same thing.
Are you talking to Mark or Ben?
I can. Thank you. Ordinance 2009-01, the Planning Commission recently worked on, is basically to strike this first section, which was pretty limited, that pets, or specifically farms, provided that no poultry or livestock shall be housed or confined within 200 feet of the front boundary of the property. Animals kept as pets are exempt from this provision. So that was a little problematic when we created that years ago to try to enforce. So what the Planning Commission is recommending for the commissioners to consider this evening and for public input, it basically it got really detailed into permitting chicken plots. We know Cecil County recently amended their ordinance on the same topic, but we followed a little bit of their lead in this wording here, as well as some other towns who are trying to permit the use. This specific section is just looking at the R1 zone. We came up with language specifically for permitting chicken plots. There's different conditions to follow. I'll go through the other conditions in other zones. But the main difference here is that if you're in the R1 zone, only properties that are less than 1/2 acre in size, the amount of chickens that you're permitted is no more than 6. So if you're greater than 1/2 acre in size, there is no limit on the number of chickens that can be permitted. And then I'll just go into the next part if everyone.
There's also, what the enclosures are, the density of the coops. There is guidelines on how big the coops need to be and all that. So that's in there too.
Yeah, I was going to get into that a little bit, the other zones. The only difference in the R1 zone, if everyone's familiar with the zoning in the town, we have 3 residential zoning districts. R1 is the least dense, so it tends to be the larger lots. And the Planning Commission felt like it would be too restrictive to limit these chicken plots to 6 chickens if you're greater than 1/2 acre in size. But the R2 zone, the R3 zone, as well as the shoreline recreation residential district where marinas are located in the commercial zone, chicken plots all follow these same provisions. The coop can be constructed in the rear yard only. Chickens must be registered with the state of Maryland. Copy of registration provided as part of the permit. No more than 6 chickens allowed, and no roosters are permitted. Roosters, we felt, were an issue with our noise ordinance. Conflict
You have to have a lot at least 10,000 square feet in size.
I thought we talked about that. There's a lot of lots, most of the lots that are in those sections are not in, have 10,000 square feet, as long as they meet the setback. Well, I thought we talked about not having that in there.
We can, yeah, I apologize if I missed that. We can strike letter D for that reason.
As long as there's a setback away from your neighbors.
Yeah.
Structures and you fit all the other criteria, you should be able to.
Yeah, the rest criteria is just enclosure fence around the coop, 4 feet in height, density of the coop provides for at least 3 square feet for each chicken, density of the run within the enclosure provides for at least 10 square feet for each chicken. Coop setbacks must follow the same as accessory structures appropriate to the zone, such as sheds. And yeah, the, where that comes into play, Renee, is, you know, if you're a 5,000 square foot lot, which is considered not conforming, your setbacks are reduced. Not 5 feet, unless it would be for a shed, it would be 3 feet or calculated differently depending on the prevailing character of the neighborhood.
As long as it's 50 feet from a neighboring, because we, when we were going over this, I have one of those lots. I don't want chickens in my yard, so please don't think that, okay? But we use my lot because I have a little less than 7,000 square feet. This I could do this in the center of my backyard. It that it would be away from everything. So we did show that it could happen.
We just limit the number of chickens.
Yes. 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 You couldn't have a bunch of chickens.
That's really amazing.
What?
That's the humane thing you want anyway,
because you
don't
want to have
small
area.
Last couple of criteria.
Go ahead.
Last few is just there's a permit fee, must be a minimum of $75. We figured because our major permit fee is $50 now for a shed, which needs to go to county for review of building codes. That's $50. And then a fence permit is $20. Minor permit, so we just felt it should be at least $75 for a chicken coop. Properties must be owner occupied. The coop and enclosure must be kept clean, free of all odors and materials that can attract rodents or help remove them, pathogens. And if any dimensional changes are made to the coop or the enclosure, revision will be required.
And that the chickens need to be registered with the state of Maryland, too.
Yes, yeah, I said that's a fee. There's a lot of provisions for us to think about, and I think I just ran through them. Is there any comment?
So what's the consequences if none of these followed and somebody has chickens that's running in everybody's yard? And so what's the consequences? We have all these guidelines. What happens if it still happens? That's my question.
It'd be similar to any other zoning violation. Someone who doesn't cut their grass, who lets it get over 12 inches in height, the first thing that's sent to a property owner is a letter from the town saying, hey, there's this provision that we have. You're in violation of this provision. You have 15 days to correct it. If you don't correct it within 15 days, you're subject to fines or district court action.
Mr. Phillips.
Okay. I can probably talk loud enough without a microphone.
Okay.
So my name is Michael Phillips. We live over at 22 Carpenters Point Road. My wife's name is Barbie Morningstar Phillips. She's the one who has the chickens. I don't. All clear. She's the one that has the chickens. I don't. But she unfortunately had to work tonight. So she wrote a statement, and I would like to read that if I may. It says, my name is Barbie Morningstar Phillips. I'm the owner operator of the Poultry Pallet. That's P-A-L-E-T-T-E, so colors. I reside at 22 Carpenters Point Road here in Charlestown. 3 years ago, I had an idea to create a woman-owned business based on my love of chickens. I spent 6 months looking into and researching all of the federal, state, county, and local requirements surrounding this business To date, I have filed for and was granted all of the clearances and registrations needed to have chickens in Maryland, which includes selling eggs for consumption. I am providing you with a copy of that paperwork. I carry insurance on my business. I follow all of the rules and regulations that were set in place at the time of my business startup, including the go-ahead from town administrator, Mr. Wibb, at that time, on March 11, 2021. My business, the Poultry Palette, is all about celebrating the entire egg. I provide a diverse chicken palette of egg colors, as white and brown are not the only colors that eggs come in. My customers tell me the blue ones taste the best. I have spent the last year and a half creating different colored eggs by breeding certain breeds of roosters with certain breeds of hens. A little chicken science, if you will. The female offspring of this joining lay a different colored egg than their mother laid. This is possible because the rooster donates the egg color gene, while the hen donates the egg size and laying pattern genes. I've enclosed a couple of photos of mother and offspring egg colors so that you can see the differences. The roosters I currently have were all hand-picked based on their color genes. My goal in this chicken science is to create hens that would be good winter weather layers, but also lay blue and green eggs. Currently, in the world of commercial hatcheries, this type of hen does not exist. All winter weather egg layers lay either a white or a brown egg, and I can't very well be the Poultry Palette if some of my beautiful colors are missing in the wintertime. As you can see, roosters are a vital part of my business. My community loves the variety of colors I offer for my table eggs that are a complement to what my roosters bring to the flock. But my business isn't only just eggs for consumption. I wanted also to offer our local community a variety of other products to celebrate chickens and their eggs. I teamed up with a local soap artisan, and she makes egg soap for me using my very own chicken's eggs. And because my business celebrates the entire egg, I upcycle my beautiful variety of chicken eggshells into jewelry. Having the unique egg colors plays a vital part in the colors of egg jewelry that I can offer. I like to let the eggshell colors speak for themselves and do not add dye to them. They are all natural. This is very much appreciated by all of my customers as they can appreciate the hard work my chickens and I put into this local business. I am also currently working with a local gentleman who makes flies for fishing. We have plans to use my rooster feathers to make unique and colorful fishing flies. The industry standard is to only use white or brown beads. Loving to be an active member of my community, I participate in the Perryville Farmers Market where I sell my farm fresh eggs, and I'm also a participant in the Farmers Market of Havre de Grace. Last year, I became a proud member of Cecil Grown through the Cecil County Department of Agriculture. I've also teamed up with Fresh Source Market in Elkton to stock my eggs, soap, and eggshell jewelry. Needing to supply eggs to a market, especially in the wintertime, is why my chicken science is so very important. I need to keep producing beautifully colored eggs all year round. To get chickens that have the same offspring, it will take a few generations for the genes to become dominant and trustworthy. My current plan is to keep breeding and hatching my new chicken type to become trustworthy genetically, to be able to apply for NPIP, the National Poultry Improvement Program, and eventually sell chicks in the future. Imagine my excitement to become the person to create a hen with a cold, hardy, high production laying pattern, but in other colors than the standard white or brown. Removing my current roosters from my flock would be very detrimental to my business and future goals. My business was created around the rules and regulations that the state of Maryland, Cecil County, and Charlestown have in place. Changing them after over 2 years of operation would be both harmful and unfair to my business and established flock. I would like you to please keep zone R1 as it previously was with no rooster restrictions. If a new no rooster ordinance or this zone is still desired, then please take into consideration a grandfather clause for those of us that currently own roosters. And also please take into consideration me, my business, and my established flock, as I've been compliant with all that has been asked of me before starting my business adventure. Thank you very kindly for listening. Chicken Lady and Carpenter's Point. I'd like to add a couple more comments. One of them is, cannot even imagine what would happen if my wife had to get rid of the rooster she already has. That includes an old rooster that was up at her mom's house that belonged to my wife, that got moved down here and has been here for three, before she even started this business. She's had it for, I want to say, 4 years down here. Virtually all of her chickens are pets, regardless of the count of them. They have names and they're meaningful to her. The only other thing I would add, she didn't mention anything about it, and we will be compliant with whatever the city decides. But the coop restriction side, the size on the coop restriction is, I'm not sure where you got the numbers of a square, 3 square feet per chicken.
That's an agricultural site.
Okay. If chickens have access to a yard, it's different than if they're confined, right? If you're confining chickens inside of a coop 24/7, they obviously need a lot more space. My wife's chickens go into the coop when it's dark and they come out as soon as the sunlight comes up, and they're sleeping, and actually being tightly packed is what they do. And they would do that regardless of how much space there is available, because it keeps them warm. It's just kind of what they do. Typically they measure those things. The requirements are measured more in linear feet of roost space, right? Rather than floor space, because floor space is meaningless if all you're doing is, you know, hopping up onto a bar. So as long as there's a yard, then coop size is somewhat negotiable, because all they're doing is sleeping there. You might want to consider taking out the restrictions on coop size per se, as long as there's a yard. Having plenty of available space in the yard obviously is necessary for health and well-being of the chickens.
Sure. Has there been a lot of complaints about chickens?
Yes, I'm the biggest complainer about chickens. I don't live on Carpenter's Point. I live on Benny Drive. My neighbor, one behind me, decided to get chickens. My next door neighbor is a nurse that works 12 hours. I don't have a problem with chickens. I grew up in U.S. Virgin Islands with chickens running all over the place. I'm not there any longer. I'm in the military, retired here. And this chicken crows 24 hours a day. I've had numerous surgeries. I didn't realize this until I went downstairs. The chicken will not shut up. And that's the problem. I have a nurse that lives next to me. She works at night. She comes home, these chickens was crowing all the time. I didn't realize it until I was downstairs. I don't care if you have chickens, but I'm supposed to enjoy my property also. Then a neighbor across the street decides to get chickens. The chickens are in my yard. I'm thousands of dollars in seeds, raw seeds, because I like my yard to look good. The chickens are over in there eating up all my grass seeds in my yard. If my dog attacks your chicken, it's a problem. If you contain your chickens, I have no problem with it, you know, but I'm supposed to be able to enjoy my property too. It's like a barking dog that never shuts up. A rooster never shuts up, especially if you're contained.
Excellent.
I was on board when this came up, and I think it's just a bag of worms. I think it's going to be a real problem with Denver. Things are going to help here, left and right. And we're going to need a chicken store. Who's going to go around and check? You're going to get any complaints from people. I'm not so sure we're going in the right direction. I think we really need to rethink.
Could there be some sort of provision to where, like, you basically, like say, he's your next door neighbor and has chickens, and then he has to maybe get, you know, a certain percentage of residents to say, hey, it's not going to bother me, go ahead and do it. Or, I mean, could there be something like that to where, like, you know, if he came to you and all six of his neighbors or whatever, and three of them said, yeah, it's not going to be a problem, but three said, yes, it's going to be a problem. I mean, could there be something like that to where if you get consent from your neighbors?
What I'm saying is, I don't care. Just don't run across the road. I'm not saying intended, but you're just like your dog. You're entitled to your dog. I have a dog.
Yeah.
But I don't want somebody walking their dog and have their dog in my yard and you're not picking it up. I pick up my dog in my yard. I'm just saying, be respectful to your neighbors if you have chickens. I mean, that rooster, I mean, like I said, I don't know what it was with that rooster. I'm not saying all roosters are like that, but this rooster crows all day long. And I've never heard a rooster crow at night. The rooster crows at night. So,
I'll chime in here because Barbara had a comment.
And I don't know if it's because they're too small of a location. Right. I don't know what it is.
Well, she suggests that a rooster crows 24/7. If a rooster crows 24/7, there must be a light on at night that makes it think that it is daylight. But, you know, it's the sort of thing that
I just think this thing's going to get out of hand if we're not here. I think we're going
to help. Aren't there other, aren't there multiple issues here? This R1 zoning, you have an in-home occupation business, but it also changes the outside character, which is against the code. An in-home occupation can't change the residential character of the neighborhood. So, and I'm not in any way opposed to what you're doing. I think it's a variance issue.
It's already been approved.
It's already been approved.
This has already been approved.
That's been there for.
That's grant. That
yeah.
Was
yeah. Been, okay. Then, but it is, if it weren't, it is a zoning issue. So if that's been approved, that's fine. I have no problems.
Okay. If it's been approved, it's all now.
Well, the concern is you can certainly change the zoning rules to make something that was approved become unapproved. And you know, is there automatically a grandfather clause?
That's what he's talking about. Yeah. That grandfather.
First line of the new ordinance.
I'm done. I go home.
That's all he's saying. I'm sure neither
my wife nor I realized that zoning came with
yes
grandfather clauses built in.
And
that's all.
Like I said, she reached out to me,
yep.
And that was one of the main things is I did not want to hurt her because it's an existing business and it was already approved. And Roosters was not.
Right. So if all of this only applies to
and I will tell you
or doing anything or whatever.
I live behind you.
Oh.
Okay, in Holloway. I don't hear you I don't hear the rooster. So.
Oh, I know. I was gonna say there's something wrong. A, there's something wrong with that rooster. Plus, you must be awfully loud because my bedroom window, which is second floor, but still looks out right upon the chicken coops, and unless I open that window, I have to go like this, even when they're crowing in the morning, to even tell that it's happening. Very, very, very quiet.
The guy who's here is no rooster, right? I'm going to be allowed to have rooster, right?
That's correct. Yes. Part of the reason for this ordinance was the noise disturbance of roosters.
And that would be the second phase of what I was saying. Do you need an additional variance? Because the current new code would say no roosters. So do you have to go get a second variance? Because I'm all in favor. I'm fascinated by the business. The description was just incredible. And I admire
her jewelry and everything is beautiful. We had it down at Avalon this past summer.
The fact that she was, oh gosh, when is this? This has been approved a long time ago. So yeah. She has her license.
But does the rooster issue add
a twist? It was already there.
The rooster issue does not.
I mean,
because she already had that.
If you're legally non-conforming,
right,
as a use, none of these provisions apply.
You're in violation.
No. What I'm saying is none of these criteria would apply because you were legally non-conforming use before this law went into effect.
Right.
But it's really just if you're not considered a legally non-conforming use.
But see, she's
legal. You have to get a permit and comply.
She's already legally.
That was one of the things that I said when we were discussing this is I did not want to hurt her because she was already in business. But I don't want her to be neighbors upset because Bruce is running around.
Couldn't we put something in here that's
say
that three strike thing or something?
My wife doesn't let me get her chicken loose because
she's gonna have to go back. It's not.
Yeah.
I was thinking though. If you have a problem, continue that problem. If you're having problems, you continue that problem. Can we send a letter, you know, like make a free strike thing, you know what I mean?
I am taking down what you're saying. I'm sorry, I don't know what her name is, but she's got problems. I knew that.
Yeah.
I just didn't know where.
Yeah, it's got her.
Is there anybody online that has anything they want to talk about with the chickens?
Anybody on Zoom? Any comment on
this? So I do have a question. This is Don Pennington. I don't know if you can hear me.
Name them before you eat them.
Okay, I will.
Is that right, sir? You don't name them if you're going to eat them, right? I said, you don't name them if you're going to eat them, right?
A dog got into
we have boxes.
A stray dog got into the chicken enclosure, and we had to put a couple of them down.
Oh.
She couldn't even let those ones.
Oh, my God.
I had to dig holes.
I got a fox.
Is there any other comments that anybody would like to talk about?
There is somebody online.
Okay.
Donald, do you have a comment for us this evening?
So yeah, I do. I hope you can hear me. I'm at 630 Baltimore Street, and I have just over 6 acres. I don't really see any special consideration for large parcels like mine. I do have chickens. I also have sheep here, and I have a pasture fenced. And I do sometimes let my chickens free range in the sheep pasture. And I guess my concern is if, you know, for larger things like mine, if I can't have a rooster, then I can't reproduce, which means I can't keep my flock going. I have to keep buying more chickens rather than reproducing my own. And that just doesn't seem sustainable. And so I guess I'm curious, is there any consideration for the larger lot owners like myself? Over.
Yeah, I'll speak to that, Donald. Your property is in the
R1 zone. Can you repeat what was said? Because we didn't hear.
Yeah, Donald's just concerned about his parcel. He's at 630 Baltimore Street, and his parcel is 6 acres in size. Mm-hmm. And he just wanted to make sure that these provisions addressed larger lots. And in that particular property, I was just going to say, it's in the R1 zone. It's been addressed. There are no limits on the number of chickens you can have since you're over 1.5 acre in size. There is still the provision regarding no roosters being permitted that you may have to look at, but your property has certainly been addressed in the proposed provision.
See, that's something else we're going to have to look at with the rooster, because he doesn't want to have to keep purchasing new chickens. Years, yeah.
Lot that needs to use that pen, so even if they're used for eggs, you don't need a rooster for eggs. You know, if you're just eating eggs. But just so you know, I didn't know I'm talking about chickens. Like I said, I was raised around.
Sure.
I'm just saying, for the smallest size lots, I mean, I have a half an acre. My belt is all half an acre. Everybody's having these chickens now, and they're coming into other people's yards. If the dogs or somebody attacks a chicken, it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. If they keep with the regulations, they keep your chickens on your property, mm-hmm. control the noise, there wouldn't be a problem. Right.
Okay. We agree. The only other comment on Zoom I see is Barbara. So she agrees with Mr. Donald that sustainability is key to owning chickens. And I think that's it for Zoom comment. Commissioner, should we move on to chapter 175?
Yes. Thank you for all the comments. And trust me, I want you to know that I went to the fall conference for Maryland Municipal League, and all the small towns are talking about regulations for chickens. So it is a hot topic.
It's huge.
It is a hot topic, absolutely.
The economy.
It is.
It comes down to a dollar a
dozen. Well, we can figure out it's a lot more work than going to work.
Yes.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
You got it.
All right, so starting with chapter 175 here, we got a lot to cover. I'm going to try to, I won't be able to show on the screen. The screen in the back's working, but not the screen in the front at the moment. I'll try and wiggle that. Maybe one of the commissioners can wiggle that, get that screen.
Well, now, back.
In trouble with this the other night.
Yeah.
It looks like the one in the van is working.
What?
Except for that switch.
Yeah, that's right.
If I'm on the TV,
it's blowing. If I get rid of the stuff off.
Oh, maybe I meant to say
it. Thank
you. Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
I didn't say no.
That,
one plane went to screen. It went light again.
Okay, yeah, it shouldn't look like a moment. So, one highlight I'll provide here is the one of the major changes that happened here in 175. Chapter 175-23, the critical area overlay district, the next section was updated. It became a new chapter. So that's very long there. Chapter 175. So a lot of the strike throughs is really just taking out that language in section 175.23 because it got relocated into another chapter. The other task that was really challenging with chapter 175 is all the different ordinances that the town has passed, see how they go back to 1984 for different things. These all needed to be cross-referenced in this document just so that we don't have any confusion about their authority. Come on, maybe a little bit. And so we still don't have TV for now. See, there was a number of ordinance passed in the 90s as well as 2000s, again addressed in this chapter by cross-reference. So we started revisions in the definition section. We added accessory apartment description that comes up under dwelling later. We did add a definition for agriculture. We added a definition for care, bed and breakfast home. I think we're informal enough here. If anyone has a question as we go along, just interrupt me.
Trank.
We can go ahead and open it up with the comment.
Care, bed and breakfast home is not a good term. It needs to be called short-term rental. That's the bar for sure. Because Airbnb doesn't stand for air, bed and breakfast. It's like saying Q-tip or Band-Aid or anything like that.
And what if it was another company, not Airbnb?
Right. Oh, I see.
Also, the term breakfast, to operate a bed and breakfast, technically, that needs health department approval. It's a completely different issue.
It does.
And different entity.
Yeah.
That's
right.
On that topic, is that defined in anybody else's, like in the county or state's definitions?
Bed and breakfast
is.
The short-term rental property is defined.
Yeah, they are defined.
That's where we got that language from, being 120 nights or less.
Bed and breakfast and STR should be two completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Question, was
there in the warranty code that uses the term bed and breakfast that does not get into the detail here? I just didn't know if there was a rationale behind the additional verbiage. So there will be later a definition for a bed and breakfast home, and that is different than a short-term rental.
Right, I
realize that. Okay. Yep. That's all right. The rationale, I think, for having them and the ordinance is currently neither one is in there.
I have a question about the permit.
Yeah.
What is the permit going to be? What's the inspection process? Is the town now accepting liability because they're permitting something? Who will be monitoring?
So a minor permit, a major permit goes to Cecil County for building code review.
A minor permit is just, it's basically a zoning permit. It's identifying that the property is a short-term rental.
So should we be identifying all rentals?
No, just short-term.
I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. And I brought it up on, you know, if you have a rental, I'm going to go back and think of a case in point. Here ago, years ago, and I think they still have it, they have a rental license fee. And each person that has a rental for each unit, if you have 4 units or 1 unit, you pay a fee, yearly fee. And it was dominant. So I think if you have a rental unit, if you have a house, you're renting it, that's how you set up it as a rental, then yes, you should pay a royalty.
With that rental fee, apparently the reason why they did that is because they were having trouble with so many police calls coming to the same houses over and over again. What was happening was they were using all the town resources to do that, so they were trying to hold the landlords responsible for who they allow to rent their places. So by doing that $20 permit, which is what it is,
right,
by doing that $20 permit, that allowed them to monitor it, that had somebody that's actually, they hired somebody to take care of that, keep track of that, and they also have contact and whatever else saying, okay, if this place has 3 police calls in 6 months, then you as an owner has to do this, but somebody has to do all that. So we got 3 employees.
I think
there's a lot of other issues you covered in a rental, and you're talking about all the things that go with the house itself. That will be, and again, it's going to take somebody to do that. Doesn't have the proper smoke detectors, doesn't have the proper exits, doesn't have the proper this, that, and the other staircase railings on nine arms. But that's all comes into a whole other venue. You're correct. That would take somebody to do that inspection. When you're a Section 8 tenant, you have a Section 8 person. But when you're just a standard tenant or a standard rental, you have it.
Well, we have the county that does the building inspections.
Yeah.
I mean, they crawl all over my house when I finished it. I know they crawl through your place. Making sure we've got hand rails, making sure we have smoke alarms.
Town should have a record of what is being rented. You know, what units where and about are them? I don't think that's a problem. That's the one time of year.
Well, what's the reason?
What's the reason?
To have the register to know.
Well,
they're operating commercial establishments in residential zone.
How is it a commercial zone?
They're charging money for the use of the facility.
How? It's different between that rental and a house rental. That's a yearly cost.
So you're saying residential houses that are being rented should be for
business of rental than your ground rental. These constant turnovers.
These
weekend rentals, and it's trying to stress.
Short-term rental, right?
Short-term rental. What it's trying to address is you have a number of people coming and going, this isn't a house meant for dwelling, meant for a residential use in a residential neighborhood. It takes away from the residential character that you hear a lot of times about, which is it's no longer a residence, it's a series of commercial buildings that were let. That are going, and what it's doing to the neighborhoods.
Well, I'm trying to in on this note here.
I'm just going to look at the movement.
The people who live alongside these things don't have the same exalted view when they come to planning and zoning that the people who own them and let them for financial consideration do. Right? And that's what the trouble in the zoning is, how do you balance the rights of both parties? Right, and that's what this attempt is to do.
I understand that, but you haven't answered the question though, because what is different about somebody coming in and a place for a week versus a month?
My answer is I don't know.
What was the question?
Why should short-term rentals be handled differently than a long-term rental?
Ken, it's just because of the frequency of turnover.
Right.
Why is that a problem? Frequency of the turnover, and it's not a problem. It's just a different type of land use. It's the frequency of the turnover, and it's a little bit, I'll say, more of a commercial
use.
It's like evolving business.
But so was a rental house. You look at part of what's good, and I think is out of sync. This is sort of like when you talk finance and politics. Okay. This is a zoning lease. And what you're maybe talking about is the commercial use of any building within that right. Right. In zoning. Zoning doesn't care. Okay. If this zoning piece says short-term rental on 140 days, long-term rental. I guess the supposition would be that it is year-round or for long periods of time, but it's only zoning.
So it's not commercial. Does that mean we're giving preferential treatment to yearly rentals versus short-term rentals? And if that's the case, does that mean we're giving preferential treatment to a Section 8?
Again, you know, you start talking like this. You're talking economics, okay? This is a zoning.
No, I'm talking about the same thing. So, well, let me ask.
If you have businesses, they should be in a commercial area. If you have homes,
you have a residential business in a commercial area. Like a residential business would be Motel 6, it's up on reported. That one, and that's completely different. They have commercial, number one, they're completely different building codes.
All building
codes. Let me finish. They've got completely different building codes. They have different regulations they have to fill. They have different stormwater management that they have to fill. They have different electric, plumbing, all of that stuff is different. They also range from anywhere from 150 people to maybe two.
What's the difference between our business and the chicken business?
Business is something where you transact for consideration.
So should we be penalizing the Hudson's for building Christmas trees?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Because they're building it in their basement as a hobby, and they're making some money. Should you be penalized?
That'll be under home modification.
Okay.
But okay. In other words, what's happening here is he's trying to get through and explain what these things are.
Right. Right. I understand that.
Yeah.
The problem I have is why does there need to be a minor permit?
Oh, that I don't know.
Yeah, that's where I have a problem because there's too much of a dividing line there. And I got to tell you, regardless of what the turnover is, these houses sit empty more than 50% of the time. So think about a house that you have a family of six that come in every single day. They're driving down the streets every day. They've got kids in the park every day. They got kids in school. They're producing more trash. They're using more water, more sewer, more everything.
Yeah, they're.
But an Airbnb is.
They're defined as neighbors.
Okay.
And citizens.
Okay.
And zoning code. With citizens.
Okay.
Right. I mean, again.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from.
The problem
that I have is the way, doesn't matter who's sleeping in bed at night, it's still being used exactly the same way. You're still sleeping there, cooking there, eating there, pooping there, whatever you're doing. It's basically the same as how he uses his house, how he uses his house. Except it's sitting empty half.
But usually in a residential neighborhood, and I'm going to talk about any commercial neighborhood. I can't talk about your business because I don't know about your business. But to me, I got an Airbnb across the street that used to be a private residence.
Okay.
I got an Airbnb right next to me that used to be a private residence.
Okay.
There was one gentleman that lived across the street from me since I bought the house.
Okay.
Very quiet, very easy going. I knew him and we got along great. It's a neighbor, is I guess what I'm getting at. It's not a stranger that I don't know. It's a turnover.
That's my point. How many people are watching after those two properties? They're coming in and cleaning every single time. They're coming in doing laundry. They're cleaning the pool. They're doing the yard work. All of those things are still like, you know,
and that's all the extra travel coming in and out for the people there.
Is it next to you?
Say that again.
Is it next to you?
I don't understand.
That's all.
My house, yeah. I live in part of it.
Uh-huh.
The other part is the Airbnb.
Right. Well, you can see when you're writing an ordinance for citizens of the town.
Yeah, I mean, I share walls. I mean, she shared walls.
And you have, what I'm saying, you have a viewpoint. So this
I understand the viewpoint, but like for instance, like the house that's next to you that has a pool, you know, whether it's noise or people coming and going or whatever, think about how much that house is empty and how often you hear nothing. You know, there's no cars in the driveway. There's nothing going on. You know, you could have a family of six there 365 days a year. You could have a Section 8 house there. I mean, it could share be worse. I mean, it really could.
The difference in my opinion.
Family that live there.
True.
And I'm very late life. They only live across the street. Right. You know what I mean? And the neighborhood is relatively a pretty quiet, well kept neighborhood.
Say, let me ask this question. Have there been problems?
Pardon?
Have you had problems with the people that have stayed in the Dell apartment?
Out in the street, noise. Yeah, we've had some problems.
How is that different than
Dick lived across the street, he parked his barn in the driveway.
Okay.
So there wasn't anybody bottling up the road when they park out in the road, so and the road ain't that kind of start pit.
So wouldn't that be more of a code violation then, where you're parking where you shouldn't be parking? I mean, should, like, if, for instance, if I had people over to my house and I had a park and everybody parked out the road, who was held responsible? Person's got the 40 or the people that parked the car that shouldn't have parked in that spot.
I missed the chicken. Can we go back to the chicken thing?
I'm not saying.
So parking and noise is basically the only problem we're having with
the only thing I've noticed so far.
Okay.
Now, Rich and Lori have only moved out of there. I don't know how long they've been written now.
Guys, I think we'll have to move on, but go ahead, Trey. What was you before you said?
Do you have any data on, like, police activity at any of the Airbnbs or anything other than parking or noise complaints?
We'd have to look into it.
I'd have to pull it. I don't have it with me. I really don't see the necessity for that.
You are creating business. You are creating a business.
It's penalized for every time you try to make a dollar.
Yeah, I didn't say that. You're changing the
we can't stay here all night, and we are going to take in consideration a lot of this because we are hearing both sides, and I want to take that everybody's going to agree to disagree, and we ultimately have to decide.
Can I take the notes? I prepared 13 pages.
You can turn that in things. for that.
I don't know if anybody's going to be able to read my handwriting.
Okay.
So
we have a lot of to go through. So
I'm aware of that. Can I talk about the advantages of an Airbnb? It's a simple list.
Maybe we just ought to have a meeting on just Airbnb.
I'm going to give my opinion. I think it's kind of unfair that we kind of let one person make their statement.
We just sat here for
and I'm just
15
saying,
minutes.
I'm just saying, but it's just like the chickens. Maybe you have an ordinance where whoever's doing an Airbnb, you bring it to their attention that this is what's going on in the Airbnb, and that give that person a number. Hey, whoever you have in the Airbnb is talking here, whatever, and they deal with it. That's how you deal with stuff rather than.
This has nothing to do with that. This is. We know what this is about. This is about the money that's going to be.
I will say this. This will be the last thing. I'm more than happy to turn in everything that I plan to say.
No, go ahead.
Quite frankly, I wouldn't mind saying it in the next meeting. Does anybody know if any other town requires a permit or anything for Airbnbs in this county?
I think County Race May.
That's not in this county.
Not in this county.
So
A tax?
Yes. I know Northeast used to make us pay a tax on not an Airbnb, but it was a bed and breakfast.
So there is a hotel tax. Completely different. So different because it's different use of the property. I called every single town in this county. No one has a permit.
I want to address that, okay? You are correct. What you're saying is no other town in Cecil County does have that.
I do know that the county is trying to get the towns together so that we can address this, but nothing has been, there's not
nothing
right
now. Yet.
Let me just read you exactly what the lady that's in charge of this in Northeast said. She said, in Northeast, they decided it's too hard to monitor. One second, my contact as well. And I'm getting old.
Who'd you talk to, Trey? Was it Beth or Sandy?
It's the lady that does, it's the same lady I dealt with when I did that permeable driveway.
Oh, okay. All right.
I can't remember her name. I can get it for you, though. She said they decided it was too hard to monitor. It was too hard to monitor, and the time and expense for someone to monitor it was not worth it. Likewise, they don't monitor who rents apartments or houses. So basically, they tried to do something, and they said, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, it's not a problem. So let's deal with it when it becomes a problem.
But they still are doing the sales tax, the tax.
Oh, right. Right. We all
pay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we all pay sales tax.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you can't get out of sales tax for anything anymore. So.
Does anybody else have any comments on it? Short-term rental properties?
I'd like to just make one comment about what Trey was saying. For one thing, we have a noise ordinance on the books. So if there is problems with Airbnbs and noise and everything,
yeah.
We could, yeah.
I'd actually like to reiterate also, I mean, I have an apartment building.
Right.
They're full-time tenants. We don't have any issues with any of our tenants. We have no issues. However, with a short-term rental, Airbnb stands behind the owner of the short-term rental, or VRBO. And if you have a nuisance problem, those people can be evicted immediately. My apartment building, I can't evict. If I had tenants that were having parties every weekend, I can't evict them probably at least for 6 months, if not even longer, because I have to go to circuit court.
Right.
So it's a bit of a, you know, he has a resolution for issues. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Right.
And I can still be a renter.
And I'll tell you, I'll be glad to share it with everybody if everybody wants to see it. I've got a pretty hefty list of why they're good and why there's a lot of advantages.
I think you can give them to us, Trey.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll type them because there's no way you're going to read this. It is a mess.
Trey, would you be willing to come to a town meeting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I usually do them on Zoom because I'm usually still at work, but yeah.
If you could maybe get on like the next agenda,
yeah,
talk to Brian to get there so that we can talk more about it, okay? So that this could be more of a talk because we do have a lot to get through and I don't want to cut you off. I want to hear what you have to say.
This is going to be a while.
And that way we can advertise it that it's more.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right.
No problem.
Okay. Anybody have any comments on short-term rental topics?
Definitely change that.
I wrote it. I'm writing.
Next definition we have is for a bed and breakfast. Yeah. A room that contains a dwelling unit and guest rooms for the guests receive a room and one meal per day. This means a single family dwelling with an owner and a manager on site that may provide food, beverage service, alcohol, and alcohol for guests and guests only. A bed and breakfast can also host weddings, small business meetings, and conferences. So we wanted to make sure, because this was an issue that had come up in the past, where it seemed like a bed and breakfast home couldn't be permitted in Charleston. So we had to give it a definition, which we used from Cecil County's, for the most part. I think we may have paraphrased a couple of words, but these were added in all of the residential zones, as we see later in the ordinance, that a bed and breakfast home can be permitted by special exception from the Zoning Board of Appeals, and there's just certain conditions to follow. We can get into that later, I guess. And that's the difference between, I'd say, a bed and breakfast and, say, a short-term rental property. We also added a definition for a boarding house. We had it in the ordinance already, but didn't define it. I won't look at that. Update the definition.
making it clear that regardless who of the land that is located on, if it's been outside of a building more than 180 days, it's considered abandoned.
My goat sits outside. I don't get to go boating very much. I'm normally walking every weekend down at Avalon.
So that was, I mean, this shouldn't be.
It's the valid, it needs to be.
Yeah, with ballot stickers on it or something.
But what you just said made it sound like.
It needs to be more than the ballot sticker. Because the boats that are sitting right down here on Conestoga Street.
If I got a ballot sticker and stuff on my boat, better not come in now and get my boat.
Able to operate. Those boats are non-operational. They haven't moved in the 5 or 6 years that I've been in Charles County.
If I've got a ballot sticker on my boat, you better not come touch my boat.
They don't run. They don't run. They're junk. They're junk.
Why are you marketing boats and not all the other?
Yeah, exactly.
Suzanne's talking.
What's been read is the amendment, right? So I'm trying to understand. Essentially saying 30 days on public property or any vessel that has remained outside of the building for more than 180 days on a private property. That was already in there.
That's
already in there.
Uh-huh.
That's not an amendment. That is what's there. Well, the amendment is
regardless
of the boat and the land that it's located on.
Yeah. So but we're saying that.
But it also states in here what he's not saying, what it also says is preface this that if the vehicle does not have a valid sticker.
And that red was just that was suggested by the town attorney just to make it clear.
Right.
There is, I mean, I think this is sort of debate to have if you hear me out, Richard. The first part. He says, you know, you have to have a valid marijuana use sticker displayed. Any vessel that does not have a balance sticker, or any vessel that's been outside for more than 180 days on private property, regardless of who owns the boat and the land is located on. So that's the issue, right? And that's what our ordinance says right now. Do we want to allow folks to put a sticker on an abandoned boat to allow it to stay there in perpetuity? That's the issue.
That's the loophole. That's the loophole that allows people to have junk in their yard. If you have a car in your yard, a Maryland car in your yard, and it's licensed.
That's a lot of
and it's licensed, but it has to have a Maryland inspection to be legal.
Okay.
These boats don't have an inspection. Anybody can plant a sticker on a junk boat to meet the loophole, and we can't do a thing about it. That's why it's got to be rewritten, and it's got to be that the boat has to be in some way operational, and they have to show proof that it's operational. It has to.
I don't think we can make them take the boat in there and make us
saying that the sticker's got patented on those boats down there when it came up as a topic last year.
I don't think we should be pointing at anybody's boats or pointing at a place or talking about a certain person or anything else. I don't think we should be doing that.
This is just public comment.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't disagree, but that's sometimes you have to use examples of when the
I understand. I'm just saying. I understand.
I mean, it also goes back to what Brian read earlier, that if you haven't mowed your grass in a certain period of time, and when a boat is sitting there and it's unmoved and the grass underneath it has not been mowed, that also is a code violation. So it just starts compounding. And, you know, it's we have to enforce code.
I understand that. But I think David already also read this and said, as long as the sticker was valid, same as if the car, as long as the license is, tag is valid.
Tree lighting would have occurred for a reason. And one of the reasons is the first sentence was written for a purpose. The purpose was if somebody abandoned a boat in town.
Right.
If they abandoned on public property, you could haul it out.
Right.
In 30 days. If somebody abandoned it on private property,
we could.
You could haul it out, but just not 30 days. You gave a little bit more time to try it. So that was the intent behind writing it.
Okay.
Now, probably should have been a period, not a comma.
Okay, that's
the end of that.
Yes.
Okay, and not leading into everything else. And maybe provisions that we're looking for are more adequately addressed in junkyard.
Yeah. Okay. I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian, can you go on?
That makes sense, Ken.
So we added a definition for campground. We have two in town limits, and we didn't have a definition. There's actually in the later on in shoreline recreational residential zone of the town, there's a whole section been added for if anyone were to propose a new or expanded campground, what sort of provisions to follow. It starts here with the definition. Campground. Campfire. Most part. It was updated. As short-term rental, bed and breakfast, as well as big house, different categories. It's already multiple categories described there. The other change there is to make clear that a dwelling has a water and sewer connection. It's not just for cooking and eating and sleeping. It's just, and a dwelling does not include
why would an Airbnb home and a boarding house, why would they not be considered dwellings?
They are. They're just being added. The red just being added.
Oh, it wasn't. Yeah. Okay, so it's an act. Okay, anything red is an act.
But you're right, Monica, that, you know, a camper. You're right, Monica, a camper or an RV is not considered a dwelling. Because it's road ready, it can be moved.
Yeah.
Should there be something in there where it says that the permanent structure?
These are just definitions where we're looking at. And yes, if you look further down, you'll also see a lot of that too.
Right, but
the dwelling has,
yes,
so that's it. So permanent's in there. Yes, blue is going away. Sorry, just to clarify.
Taking
Okay, so it's still there, but it's just, yes, it's a different subset. What is it you can zoning and you're not there? You should be able to create there. There's a little clarification on the subdivision and definition. Clarifying that lots and streets must conform to the subdivision regulations.
non-title buildings were further defined, requiring basically creating a town requirement. The state of Maryland has jurisdiction over water, whether it be streams, rivers, or wetlands. But there's also a 25-foot protected buffer around non-title wetlands that the state has jurisdiction over. This was added just to make sure that the town also has, I mean, we certainly, from a stormwater management perspective, want to keep non-title wetlands intact. The town has an interest in that as well, which is why this whole section was added. Basically, just to say a permit would be needed, town approval would be needed, not just state approval, to disturb any part of the non-title wetland that is 25-foot buffer. And in some cases where development could not mitigate for that disturbance, they could pay the town a fee in lieu based on the square footage of that disturbance, which then the town, it says, specified the town will keep in a separate account for reforestation activities in other areas of the town. So it's just making sure that, again, non-title wetlands are important to the town just like they are to the state, and that there's a process in place for disturbing them, a local town process. We did add a definition for a roadside stand. This is, I think, similar to Mr. Phillips' property. It's basically an area or a vehicle used for the display and sale of agricultural produce. That sort of roadside stand is permissible in certain zones in the town. A permit would be required, a minor zoning permit in towns. It needed to be defined first. The salvage yard definition was updated to include, it's not just automobiles, it's to clarify vehicles, it includes aircraft as well as aircraft. So any kind of vehicle, planes, trains, and automobiles, it's added to that definition.
Is the term salvage yard the right term? Because salvage yard implies something that's on Route 40 as opposed to a derelict boat or a unrunning car in somebody's yard. Yeah. Salvage yard is too broad a term.
So we wasn't in the application. Recently added boats and aircraft to it. One of the things about a salvage yard is that it's also if you're storing material.
Right.
Okay, and a lot of times that's one of the out of bounds portions of
right.
You are just storing stuff. Yeah. Cars, trains,
right?
Yeah, and that keeps putting the city there and allow how you have to do it. Oh, and if we could publicly thank, I see Dave Doster on this one. Dave Doster was a state planner who dealt with planning and zoning ordinance for about a year and a half to let. Technical device. Thank you, Dave. Your patience, Joe.
Yeah, Dave. Yes. You know, I've reached out to him just to let him know that this is happening, and I know he was curious because he did put a lot of work into the first round of
yes
revisions. We did make a slight change in addition to the definition of a structure to include lean-to structures. We've seen a few of those. Just wanted to make sure that they were similar to a carport, are also defined as a structure. We did, on this next page here, we added a reference for setbacks, a visual. Sorry, I thought it was the next page. It's probably coming up right here. Just to give a little bit more clarity to, because there's different lots, different situations, panhandle lots, through lots, corner lots, interior lots, and how we measure setbacks for development. Excited to have that in there as a guide.
Just so everyone's aware, I think for the commissioners too, their awareness, this 175.2, we're now out of definitions, we're getting into the zoning map. I think a separate public hearing adopting the updated, it was not a big change. And Dave Dahlstrom, if you want to chime in on the zoning map, you know, if you have any opinions on that subject, I think it'd be valuable for the commissioners, especially to hear. But that would be a separate hearing and separate ordinance update, I'll say. But that is next, I'd say, on the agenda. Not next meeting agenda, but it's to do. It's to update the zoning map. David, I'm assuming you're paying attention. Do you have any comment there on the updating the zoning map? So getting into the different zoning provisions, cruising right along here. Good news is I think it might be about a third of the way through. Was that way through the ordinance? Making progress. We did define, remember how we were talking about legally non-conforming uses. We did just add some terms in there we felt for, you know, these uses that have continued. They've not been enlarged, increased, or extended, and they've been permanently occupied. That all, when a use is legally non-conforming, those are usually all conditions that need to be met. That it's never stopped operating, it hasn't gotten bigger, it's been occupied the whole time. It's non-conforming use, but there's also non-conforming structures. Changes there. So in the first zone, residential, low-density residential zoning district, we're kind of excited to update in here under the Planning Commission. The second round was a description of what the R1 zone purpose is, what it's trying to encourage. We did under the uses that are just permitted by right, single family, as well as I'm going to call them short-term rental properties that are in R1 zone. Here's where we get into some new uses and new conditions. Home occupation is a home business in the R1 zone, and a lot of these further defined uses, I'll call them, are also have very similar criteria. I don't think the criteria changed from one zone to the next, say R1 versus R2. So a home business, after review and approved, it needs a permit that needs to be reviewed and approved by the Planning Commission. These are the conditions that home businesses have to follow. They're conducted on the same property as the residence, don't change residential character, no more than two assistants employed, no type of advertisement, except for one unlighted sign identifying the home, limited to 3 square feet in size. No goods for sale, rent, or repair shall be stored on the property in a manner that can be seen from off the premises. There's a parking section later that must be followed, and no equipment or process shall be used which creates noise, vibration, glare, fumes, odors, or electrical interference detectable from adjoining properties. So any kind of a home business in the R1 zone in this case, would need a permit, would need to follow those conditions.
Brian, can I go back insofar? I think there were section A, number 3. I just wanted to clarify the provision that says private clubs, lodges, and recreational buildings, public buildings, and community firehouses, accepting those which the chief activity is a service customarily used at the business.
Sorry, yeah, that was deleted, that section.
That was act. So that ends as private clubs, lodges, recreational buildings, and public buildings and community firehouses are permitted in R1.
Yes.
Thank you.
And if there's any comments on home occupations, roadside stands, again, in the R1 zone are permitted after review.
commission. There are limitations, there's criteria and conditions to follow. They're limited to 500 square feet in size. Off-street parking must be provided at a ratio of one space per 200 square feet of stand with a minimum of two parking spaces. Minor permit is approved. And the roadside stand shall be located at least 5 feet from the edge of the roadway. This again is giving a mechanism to approve a roadside stand, which the town did not previously have.
Is there any criteria for parking space if it's a roadside stand? I can't read this, but
that's all right. It's a minimum of two parking spaces.
Okay.
And a ratio for one parking space for 200 square feet of the size of the stand. And yeah, I think the parking spaces are defined in the parking section as to size. The board, the planning commission did delete from, or no, I'm sorry, we did not delete. We left the definition alone, not the definition, but what is permitted by special exception in the R1 zone, hospital, and sanatorium.
We wanted to delete, but legal said no.
Yes, correct. Thanks, Ken.
Leave it. This is the hospital.
All right, so the two other uses that were added in the R1 zone, and like I said, you'll see this in the other zones, just almost verbatim criteria. Boarding home can be permitted with the following conditions. One off-street parking space provided for each guest room located at the rear of the site. Parking areas need to be 50 feet away from adjacent residentially zoned property. Establishment shall be owner or manager occupied and managed. Facilities for dining shall be in the location customarily used by a single family, and no separate kitchen shall be provided. I'd have to go back to the definition, but yeah, I mean, a boarding home is different than a bed and breakfast home, and it's different than a short-term rental property.
Yeah,
I can go back to the definition.
It was the same with when they brought the back during the war that they brought people in from West Virginia to work down at APG too.
So the definition for boarding house, just to answer the question anyway, I mean, it's a residential use, at least one dwelling, more than two rooms that are rented individually. And they do not constitute separate dwelling units. So it's almost like a mini hotel, right? A boarding house, it's different than bed and breakfast in that it doesn't have it's not occupied by a longer term resident. And it's longer term stays. So now I think we're getting into the R2 zone. I guess I'll just point out anything different. Again, there's a description for what sort of land use is envisioned for the R2 zone. Nothing different there for short-term rentals being permissible. Home occupations with those conditions, same conditions. Boarding home. Difference here is it's not in the R1, it was permitted with conditions here. Boarding home and bed and breakfast in the R2 can only be permitted by special exception following those same conditions. So the Board of Appeals would have to approve boarding homes and bed and breakfast homes in the R2 zone.
And I believe that that's it for R2. I believe that holds true in R3. Yeah, I think just because the density is a little higher. Yeah. More restrictive just being, you know, for boarding homes and home occupations.
So basically,
needing special exceptions.
So for the R2 zoning, that means that the short term rentals are not going to be allowed?
Yeah, no, they're
same. They are.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go back. R2, there was no change to short term rentals or home occupations, permitted with conditions. Short term rentals are just permitted. There's no conditions spelled out for them. But breakfast time. I guess, yeah, it's more restrictive because you got to go to the board of appeals.
Yeah, it's confusing to me because I get from the Northeast opponents like everything in R2. For the R2 zoning, everything in R1 is permissible and then extra. So I guess that's what's confusing me. It's like ours is a little different. It's more restricted to just those two things.
Yes.
And as you go down, it becomes more so.
Yeah, like in R3, you see everything that was. Home occupations are still permitted with conditions. There's no change there.
That kind of goes back to where we're split hairs, where we're still. We're still using the house the same way that it would have been used, whether it's a family of five or whether it's a couple coming for the weekend. Well, you're now advocating for the bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. Airbnb is changed. Say that again.
The short term rental is allowed in every summer.
Okay. Period. Oh, you're talking about the bed and breakfast.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm getting screwed up with the air bed and breakfast and the
yeah.
Okay. I'm following,
yeah. Are these zones just because they get smaller? The property gets smaller?
When you scroll through, there's a,
yeah.
Each of those areas have a something that they're trying to do. Okay, suburban living or city living or rural living. And when you read the philosophy statement in there, then everything that goes in that zone is there. So if you have nothing in the single family house, and you want to put in a bed and breakfast with sewers, again, it's a larger hit to those neighborhoods that would be different. Even the R1 where there's plenty of land, and the R3 where it's permitted. And you see those signs? This is a zoning community. That's what it means to the English.
Yes.
Really?
I never saw that either.
I think generally speaking, yeah, the lots get smaller and the buildings get closer together, you tend to have more restrictions because it's all about, you know, trying to get along with your neighbors. And so we get down into R3. And this is the zone that gets into a variety of housing types, you know, R1 and R2. Single family homes are the only permissible residential use. This allows for two family duplexes, townhouses, and apartments. Again, home occupations are permitted with conditions. And then by special exception, what was added?
Townhomes.
Yes.
R3 is
in this.
Yes.
Well, no.
Reverse. R3 is here. The historic district is within it. Within the historic district, it's only simple townhouses. The rest of the R3 is allowed townhouses for the purpose.
This is Selfie Street and R3.
Yes.
That's in the historic
district. Yeah, it's in the historic district, single family housing, but it's in R3, but not in the historic district.
Right.
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 Okay.
Yeah, that says it right there, Richard. Multifamily dwelling, except in the historic district, under that section of that.
That's what I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah, like Ken said, there is some R3 outside of the historic district. Okay. So again, approved by special exception only is both homes and bed and breakfast homes, all in those conditions. So in the, that's it for R3. The shoreline recreational residential district. Here's where it was added about campgrounds. Those that might be proposed new or expansion, these are the conditions that they would need to follow. Mainly as part of a site plan approval process. And then these were borrowed from Cecil County. Not a whole lot of paraphrasing. Yep. Just so you know, Trey, really for anybody, this ordinance is on our website.
Yeah, I didn't have time to get all the way to it.
You'd have to make a mental note, like page 31.
Out of I just don't
figure. Okay, that might be easier. Again, this is just, it's like any general kind of zoning change when the campground might be looking to locate on new ground in this zone, or just expand their current operation. You know, what kind of guardrails should be in place to make sure that it affects the rest of the neighborhood, maintain the character that's there now. That's what these provisions are meant to do. The whole page, I don't know if I need to. Then breakfast home is permitted as a special exception also. The same the homes were left off. It's not being promoted. This last but not least, as far as the zoning district goes in C1, we didn't change anything. So here's that historic district section. We'd ask the historic district commission for their review. Any additions, I think their comments would be minor. We know that there may be changes coming in the future, though, and that's one thing to always keep in mind is just because we might be at a point right now where we could say pencils down, I think there's always opportunities to review and improve what we have. One thing we wanted to make clear here in the historic district section, which is the bed and breakfast homes could be permissible in the historic district. And any sort of use or recreation in the commercial zones or the shoreline recreational zones would be permitted within that historic district as well.
That does not require it.
Well, this is, yeah, what you're saying is right. I mean, if in the historic district, whatever that zone might be, bed and breakfast would follow that zone's provision. So, just as an example, like in R3 in the historic district, bed and breakfast could be approved by special exception. Yeah.
in that critical areas section became its own chapter. And I didn't know that. It was just updated about 2 years ago. No proposed changes to off-street parking, even though we do know it's one of our challenges in town when we have an event. We didn't. I know when the Planning Commission recently looked at it, didn't feel the need to change any of these provisions. Now we're 2/3 of the way through, maybe even 75% of the way. I'm not trying to miss anything as I cruise through. We did have this come up for temporary building. I want to clarify. Temporary storage containers for folks saying we want to demolish a shed, but they have stuff in that shed. They're allowed to get a zoning permit from the town to put that stuff into the temporary storage container. And it's typically for a 6-month period until they can construct that shed, put their stuff back into it. So it's a temporary building that can be permitted. They'd have to follow the same setbacks as a shed, for example. Minor clarification for the freestanding signs shall not exceed 50 square feet in total area per business. Provided that it has the right amount for 100 or more than their exposure. Now, we did get, there was some talk earlier about the difference between salvage yards and junk yards, and what the Planning Commission tried to do was, even though one could argue that they're different, we tried to streamline it in a way so that salvage yard captured the essence of what a junkyard is, both by definition, but also by use. And so this whole section basically was just changed the name from junkyard to salvage yard. There are no salvage yards in any zone in town, except for the C1, or by a special exception of pre-letting. Just clarified minor, there was some discussion about fences in town. This ordinance provision has been a long-standing requirement. You have to build it at least 6 inches in or away from your property line. Or if you want to put it on top of the property line, you need the adjacent property owner's written permission. I think probably why there was some discussion, it's kind of funny to think about in theory. If you had two property owners not talking to each other and they both put it 6 inches in, you have this strange 1 foot of empty space between property. Who maintains that? We figured to leave it as is. Minor clarification for appeals advertising, section 175.4C. The appeal. Nothing. Minor changes there, I don't think. Anything? Yep, we're almost done. Just another clarification there for different applications for variances. I think that helps folks. Whoever needs to apply for a variance, they have these conditions that they should demonstrate. Or just clarify.
was going to say, I know there's changes in here. So permits can be revoked. And there's this section in here. We just wanted to clarify that 10 days notice will be given before revoking a permit. And the fact that someone has a revoked permit, if they would continue to use the land that was previously authorized from that previous permit, that would be a zoning violation. And also to clarify that once a permit is revoked, a new permit may not be approved unless a finding of substantial change is determined by the Planning and Zoning Commission. We wanted to make sure that obviously when anything is permitted, that it gets done in a timely manner or else the permit's canceled. But if somebody changes that permit halfway through the project, that it can be revoked, and that change would have to come back before the Planning Commission before it could continue with the project. Otherwise, it would be a zoning violation. I think that's it, guys. Unceremonious ending. I don't know if we really changed anything. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. And I want to thank the 34 for everything that they've done. Is there any comments that were not stated during? Any comments online?
Looks like we just have David there. I don't know if David, you got anything to say or?
Otherwise, we're good.
I also want the residents to know that the Planning and Zoning Board is now looking at the comprehensive plan. So we are looking at to redo that and update it. That's going to be a process. And we'll take this to the board to talk about. And if there's anything that we need to possibly do minor changes, then we'll talk to the Zoning Board. With that, so I make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Thank you very much, everyone.